Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. If you like what we provide, please rate, review, share, and follow on your favorite platform. Questions and compliments can be sent to our email.
Hello. I bet you're wondering why I'm doing this plug. Well, it's a job. I've been unemployed for years, and I'm too young to work. So do us a favor and buy this theater a coffee for a measly dollar.
This theater is not about profits, but the equipment and media do require funding. Though listening to these productions is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. If you care to help, please buy our unemployed movie star a coffee via the Ko-fi.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material and equipment needs. Special thanks go to our first Ko-fi angel, Juanita Paz Chalacha.
Oh, I like that.
And thank you, truly, for listening.
Lockpins out!
Lift the gate!
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. This is episode 24.
This is book 2 of A Bridge of Doom by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Traversity, Demons and Demigods. The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Chapter 22. Carefully picking out a couple of leaf specks, Calron placed the small bowl of water on a stone and waited for the liquid to still, casting his eyes about the grove where he had stopped to hide and rest. Willowy crowns of dangling branches bearing thin leaves tinged by autumn's gold bowed inward toward the flattened grasses of the clearing. Quiet sounds came from where his horse was tethered to a tree nearby, the roan's form fading into the lengthening shadows, the white patch on its gently bobbing nose gleaming like distant pale moonlight on the water. He was 4 days out from Raven Point and 1 day past the Ruvian border. Unaware of the Deathmark decree, and feeling far from danger within the Dreadmire territory, he had taken a day or so to rest and forage for necessary components, stones and plants, for several of his spells, having had nothing to use since his capture in Hopetown. Fortunately, the terrain had much to offer in components for lesser magics, and having located a bit of white quartz in the pebble-lined bottom of a nearby pond, he wanted to scry for his mountain men allies and perhaps find out if they were successful in thwarting his pursuers. Composing himself, he knelt before the tin bowl and calmly gazed within, held the small alabaster chip squeezed between two fingers, then delicately waved his other hand over the quiescent water and muttered the incantation for seeing.
Get down with the confinement.
The The reflection of the dusk sky above immediately shimmered and shifted to blackness. Confounded by the lack of images, he had been picturing the lead giant of the four. He sought one of the others. This giant lay wounded in his cave. Grimly allowing the scene to fade away, Calron knew his inability to find the leader meant he was dead.
They were unsuccessful.
He narrowed his eyes at the water's surface again and searched first for Marshal Garnett, whom he found talking to someone on a street in Hopetown, then for Gawain. The enchanter was indoors somewhere, also engaged in conversation with someone unseen.
Nothing conclusive in either place. Except Garnett is not taking part in the chase.
Looking up and away, Calron stared at nothing in particular and considered any other places or people for whom he might scry, but could think of nothing or no one. If he had been able to scry for Gawain ever since he escaped, he would have known if the enchanter hunted him again. With more sophisticated reagents, he could invoke a seeing of the near future, but such amenities were out of reach for the moment.
Perhaps the druids will have something.
Dropping his hand and pocketing the chip of quartz, he picked up the dented bowl and blithely flung its contents into the ground. Disgusted with the lack of useful information while finding consolation in the fact that
I am free and beyond Ruvian jurisdiction. And yet, someone has overcome the mountain men and killed their leader.
Resolving to scry for Gawain intermittently during the next day, he decided to bathe in the pond and then settle next to a warm fire for the night. Tomorrow would bring him to the Druid Temple, hopefully, and a step closer to his goal of meeting with a dragon.
And learning the secret of Gawain's crystal.
Dreams of pursuit plagued him in his sleep, the most vivid one bringing Marshal Garnett into his camp to stand judgmentally over his dozing body, the gyrating shadows from the waning campfire creating a spectral image of dark, forbidding justice. Before he could react, the lawman's image shifted to that of Tisha, his were-tiger lover, whom Gawain had killed. The young, fair-haired girl smiled seductively at him as she tugged off her ragged dress and knelt beside him, her naked, firm body alternately glowing and shadowed like a ghost's. She pouted her lips hungrily and ran her hands up his naked legs, then touched her warm tongue to his flesh, her firm breasts brushing him teasingly. The image was so powerful, so real, he could not keep his loins from responding, and soon she was upon him, possessing his body with her strong hips and kissing his neck. Strangely, he was unable to reciprocate her attentions, his limbs held fast. Yet, as she moved deliberately upon him, he was carried away on the throbbing surges of orgasm. During their throes of delight, she changed to a dark-haired woman with deep black eyes, her slender body devouring his with irresistible force, her long, thick hair shadowing her face. And then the dream faded into featureless sleep that continued peaceful and undisturbed for several hours. Returning gently back to consciousness, he opened his eyes to the two suns already above the horizon, perplexed that he should have slept so long when he knew he was still being pursued. He sat up and reached for some fresh tinder for the fire, a warm breakfast first on his mind. He would have to be up and on his way soon if he was to find the Druid Temple. And then he saw her sitting just beyond the gray coals of last night's fire, the young, dark-haired woman of his dream. Not entirely awake, Calron frowned and blinked at her, rubbed his face, and looked again. She watched him with those same dark eyes as she sat with knees drawn up, arms wrapped around her legs. Except for a brown robe hanging precariously from her shoulders, lending perhaps some warmth but little else, she was naked. Her face, though plain, was not unattractive, dominated by a proud nose, rounded cheeks, and a small, sweet mouth. Knowing he was far from any elfin forest and the seductive tree spirits that lurked within, he scowled at her.
Who are you?
Then snatched up some of his blanket with which to cover himself, more self-conscious about his thin legs than his privates. She smiled crookedly, not moving her eyes from his.
It's a bit late for modesty, isn't it, lover?
Discomfited, he shifted his gaze away.
I thought it was a dream.
You were meant to.
She got up on her knees.
Was it not pleasurable for you?
He meant to flick his eyes sideways at her, but stopped at the sight of her tanned breasts, shining almost golden in the sunlight.
A proper introduction might have been helpful.
And when has propriety been a requirement for you?
He tore his eyes away from her body and frowned at her irritating simper.
You haven't told me who you are.
Mara.
She gathered some discarded clothing and began to dress herself.
I'm a druid.
Eh?
His displeasure with her melted away suddenly.
A druid?
Pulling a shift over her head and then closing her brown robe over it, she untucked her long hair from her shift.
Yes. Who and what are you?
I am Calron. I am a mage.
To make his point, he cast a hand over the blackened remnants of his campfire. Bright flames proceeded to burn the leftovers of last night's wood. Grabbing the few pieces of unused tinder nearby, he threw them into the flames and warmed his palms, then saw her glancing at the shackles on his wrists.
I was accused of severe wrongdoing and held prisoner in Rue. I escaped and came here.
Lifting eyebrows slightly, mildly impressed, she sat back down and tugged on her sandals.
For what? The Dreadmire is not a hospitable place, and certainly not a first choice for someone seeking shelter from the law. In fact, you're the first traveler I've seen here.
Standing, he reached for his breeches and pulled them on.
I want to confer with your people. Will you take me to the temple?
I could take you to the gateway, but you would not be able to cross the bridge without my help.
Then help me, Mara.
I cannot.
She started braiding her hair. Stopping amidst putting on his tunic, he squinted suspiciously at her.
Cannot, or will not.
I'm denied entrance to the holy grounds until my initiation into the next circle, which will be in 2 moons. During this time, I am to survive on my own within the boundaries of Dreadmire.
Does this include seducing any traveler you wish?
She looked up from her braiding and wrinkled her forehead with concern.
Are you truly displeased with our sharing?
He had known druidic rites tended to be centered around the sex act, but was not certain if he had been made subject to one last night.
Why did you?
She dropped her hands and stared uncomfortably into the fire.
I've been out here wandering the territory for an entire moon with 2 more to go. I was lonely. When I felt you nearby, smelled the smoke of your fire, I couldn't help myself.
She lifted her eyes to meet his, her expression one of regret.
I invoked a spell over you so you wouldn't awaken amidst our sharing and be frightened. I would have gone away before this morning, but you seemed to enjoy the memory of Tisha so much.
What? How dare you presume to intrude?
I merely saw an image in your dreams that would please you.
He glared into the fire, fuming at the intrusion.
Now
bodies of women are being used against him. Tisha is long dead now. A man who pursues me is responsible for her murder.
Mara shifted in her place as she looked back to him.
I'm sorry. I'm only here because I thought the least I could do after partaking of you would be to stay and keep you company, if you wished it.
Touched by her honesty, but disgusted by his helplessness against her domination of him while he slept, he could only look away and glower unspoken epithets.
Another woman having power over me.
Look, I can see I made a mistake.
She returned to her braiding, her fingers working furiously now.
I'll just go away and leave you alone.
Feeling vindicated by the guilt he had invoked, he nevertheless decided to take advantage of the situation.
After all, she is a druid. I would consider forgiving you if you might help me.
I told you, I can't take you to the temple.
Perhaps you can provide what I seek.
She finished working with her hair, left it dangling over her chest, and looked expectantly at him.
Being a druid, I presume you possess the ability to commune with all life.
She tilted her head with curiosity, wondering where he was leading her.
In a manner of speaking.
Ah, yes. Speaking. Can you speak with animals?
Druids are able to convey and exchange ideas and thoughts with other creatures.
Any creature?
She shrugged.
Within reason. One couldn't very well talk with fish.
It's not fish that concern me, Mara.
With whom do you wish to speak?
Delighted his point was understood, he smiled encouragingly.
Take me to a dragon.
Chapter 23. With the map provided by the dwarves of Ravenpoint, the group made good progress, following the village trail back to the main road. Then, after following Calron's tracks along the widening river, they located a branching stream that led more directly toward him, the main tributary taking a longer, meandering route toward Dreadmire. Shortly after the branch stream, they barely missed having an encounter with a swamp dragon. Glink's presence proved good fortune. The group was forewarned the second evening out from Flena's village when he detected the sudden, strong, sweet-sour odor of marsh water while they had yet to reach the outskirts of the wetlands. Alerting the others to hide among the trees, Gaewon extinguished the fire while Ablui demonstrated an ability no one had seen before. He called forth a sudden breeze. That placed them downwind of the wandering serpent, thus preventing it from smelling them or their horses. Their actions proved sufficient, and the swamp dragon, a fully grown adult by Gaewon's guess of its size, ambled past them without notice, its mind apparently on other things than supper. That same evening, and many nights thereafter, Clough noticed that a large frog seemed to be following them, its loud, low croaks always conspicuous. An amusing curiosity at first, it proved to be an irritant by making sleep difficult. They tried to scare it off, but could never quite locate its hiding place. The countryside remained relatively pleasant, the weather mild as they followed the Dark Mage's trail into the flatlands, where the terrain began to get marshy, with larger trees weeping their branches toward the soft ground. Soon the stream meandered, making them ford it several times until finally, by the map's reckoning and Calron's continuous heading into the heart of the territory, they were able to leave it behind and plunge directly into the marsh. Trees appeared only in clusters now, the landscape dominated by high grasses turning brown with autumn. Following the relatively fresh hoof prints of a single horse, they came across one of Calron's campsites. Gawain immediately used his crystal to scry for the dark mage and was mildly surprised to find him in the company of a druid, confirming his earlier theories as to his destination, but not his purpose. Repeated scrying throughout the next hours revealed mage and druid to be traveling on a raft into the broader waters of the marsh. Angered by the idea of Calron having duped a druid into assisting him, and amazed that he had been able to get into the druid's holy grounds in the first place, the enchanter pressed the chase, wanting to catch up with their quarry as soon as possible. Calron was running out of territories to traverse. The mountains to the north were unexplored and impassable. Unless he had a boat waiting for him, the sea offered no escape either. He would have to stop soon and defend himself. Also, Gawain had no doubts that the dark mage would discard the druid woman once his objective, whatever it be, was reached. Worse, unlike the rolling hills and broad forest of Rue, the Dread Mire was an endless maze of ponds, lakes, streams, caves, bogs, and damp forest, which made stalking someone very difficult and, because of the unpredictable wildlife, extremely hazardous. On their third day out from the village, however, they came across a dangerous distraction. Fresh tracks made by a pair of large, four-toed feet. Hillmen, definitely. They're supposed to have only four fingers on their hands, too. How fresh are the prints, Gon? Gon inspected the tracks.
No more'n half a day. Probably fresher.
The wetlands in these parts had a sour reek he found unpleasant.
It's been getting quiet around us for the last short while.
Hope they're not much brighter than mountain men.
Stupider, or so we've been told. Clough pointed in the direction they had been heading.
I would guess, if they're hiding, it will be in that patch of trees on that small rise.
That would be stupid. If I were them, I'd lay down in these tall grasses and attack from where I wouldn't be expected. Good thing you're not one of them.
Let's keep together. If they attack, we should concentrate our defense instead of getting split up.
Agreed.
Cautiously, they advanced, all eyes and ears pricked as they neared the foreboding patch of trees. Large bodies dropped out of the bobbing branches. Several large shapes appeared, barely clothed in animal skins and brandishing rude clubs. The first one, apparently either their lookout or leader, bobbed up and down, sizing up the party, decided they could be overcome, and beat the ground with his club. Others appeared behind him and took their turn, bobbing up and down.
How odd.
They do look like smaller cousins of our infamous mountain men.
Flayna was disturbed by their odd movements and round eyes.
I feel like the object of a hunt, the way they're looking at us.
The horses reflected her discomfort. We are. Remember, they kill any creature for food. We're nothing more than meat on four legs to them. Thasgar notched an arrow.
Four legs?
I would wager they think we and the horses are one animal with two heads. Why else would they stare at us like that? More and more hillmen appeared out of the trees. It would be so much easier if they'd found Calron for us.
Gawain, outnumber us. There's more than half a score.
Aye. The enchanter counted 12.
How do we deal with them? Who attacks first?
Let them take the initiative.
Huh.
If we are nothing more than game for them, we should act as such.
How do you mean? Gawain shifted in his saddle to look at the priest.
If we act first, they will probably fight only briefly, then run off and figure a way to overcome us in the future. We must prove our superiority to them in a manner they will remember. Let us stand here like deer when they attack, as long as the horses will let us, like an animal frozen in terror. Let these hillmen feel confident. Then as they close, we lash out. Give them the first bloody nose, and they'll think twice before bothering us again.
Thasgar grinned and patted Ablui on the back.
You sound like an old warrior I once knew.
Good plan.
Gawain patted Maledon's withers lightly. Would you let your friends know what we intend, Male? 'Twould help if they stay still. His elf horse nodded vigorously and stamped a front hoof as he whickered to the other horses. They answered him, their tails swishing in response. The hillmen rallied their courage and started to rush the group, pulling strings. Taut, Clough, Flayna, Thasgar, and Gon took aim with their bows.
Keep together. They expect to scatter the herd with that approach.
Right. Gawain dismounted and took a solid stance ahead of his companions. I'll try to separate the leader from his tribe. Scatter them instead. The hillmen's greater size became clear as they neared, giving everyone in the group a moment of self-doubt. And yet the simplicity of their attack, raucous yells with clubs held over their heads, overwhelming to behold initially, was also cause for confidence. They would be easily repelled. True to Gawain's request, all the horses held their places confidently, trusting their masters to keep them safe. The hillmen came to less than 10 giant paces away.
Now!
Instantly, shafts flew and found their marks in hillman throats and chests. At the same time, Gawain invoked a wall of flame that shot up out of the high grasses, making a barrier of fire and heat that separated the two lead hillmen from the 10 that followed. Unaware that they were cut off from their support, the leaders continued their charge.
Break and ring!
Ha!
The group dispersed in all directions for a few moments, then turned and encircled the two hillmen who suddenly realized their predicament. Arrows, hooves, and swords clashed briefly with clubs and fists. Clough and Ablui got close enough for hand-to-hand, the elf cutting deep into one hillman's gut, Ablui blinding another with deft jabs of his staff, while Flayna and Thasgar loosed more arrows. By the time Gawain's wall of fire had died down, the two hillmen lay dead, and their brothers had run off, leaving a third on the ground with Flayna's arrow in his throat, spouting blood.
Take that! I'll teach him.
Excellent strategy. Gawain winked at Ablui. They'll think twice before bothering us again. Collecting weapons and horses, they moved onward into the wetland and saw no more of the hillmen. This is performed for a live audience. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2025. Character voices for Episode 24 are performed by Jackie Illig, Mary Celeste, Kevin Norris, Richard Hammer, Darcy Aradell, and H, the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Francesco D'Andrea, Evan McDonald, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Mix Kit of Victoria, Australia, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.